Hello and welcome to this RCGP podcast, which explores the veterans' view of the Veteran Friendly Practice Accreditation Programme. I'm Dr. Emily Brooks, a veteran of both the Army and the Royal Air Force, and a current RCGP Veterans Clinical Champion. This podcast will provide information and insight to NHS GPs and primary healthcare teams about the RCGP Veterans Friendly Practice Programme and the benefits for their veteran patients. The evidence is that the programme has been hugely positive for both veterans and practices who have become accredited. The aim of this podcast is to discuss the programme from the point of view of a veteran who has personally championed the project to numerous GP practices across England, leading to those practices becoming accredited. We will explore why he thinks the project is important and why he thinks more practices should become involved. There are around 2.4 million veterans in the UK, and 18,000 service personnel leave the military every year. It's understood that approximately 8% of the patients on an NHS GP list are veterans, so it's important to understand their specific needs. Joining me for the discussion is Andrew, a Navy veteran who served in the Falklands War. Hi, Andrew. Thank you so much for joining me for this discussion today. I'm really delighted to have the opportunity to speak to you in more detail. As I said in the introduction, you've been hugely supportive of the Veteran Friendly Practice Programme, and you've independently and by your own initiative been contacting practices across England and encouraging them to sign up to become accredited. We'll come on to discuss that in a bit more detail later, but maybe we could start off if I could ask you to introduce yourself a little more and maybe tell us a little bit about your military background.
Yeah, so hello. I was born into a service family in May 1964. My father was in the RAF. I'm the eldest of three boys. As a result of my father's career, we moved around a lot, which had many benefits, but also some drawbacks. And for me, one of the drawbacks was changing schools regularly, which I didn't particularly enjoy. I left school at 16 after my exams, and I joined the Navy at 16 and a half. After basic training and trade specialising training, I joined HMS Hermes in January 82, which was an aircraft carrier based in Portsmouth. And then on the 2nd of the 4th, 1982, Argentina invaded and occupied the Falkland Islands. And just 3 days later, we sailed to the South Atlantic as part of a naval task force. I joined my second ship, HMS Daney, which was an Exocet Leander frigate, basically, in 1984, and stayed on her until the beginning of 1986, when I joined the Devonport field gun crew, who would perform at Earl's Court against the other three commands, Portsmouth and Fleet Air Arm, in a two-week competition. And after that, I came back to Plymouth, and I left the Navy in November 1986. I then joined the prison service in 1989. After training, I got posted to Long Larton, which was a maximum security prison near Evesham. 3 years later, I got posted to HMP Gloucester, which is now closed. And then in 1995, I went to Stoke Heath, which was a young offenders in Shropshire.
Thank you. It sounds like you've had a really interesting career, both in the military and in the prison service. Did you come across many veterans in the prison service?
Yeah, at the time, there was a lot of ex-military people in the prison service when I joined. But towards the end of my time in the prison service, that wasn't really the case. They weren't really recruiting ex-service people. It had changed somewhat.
So when was it that you first felt that you were having some health problems as the result of your service career? And at that point, did you know where you would seek support from for that?
It first started about sort of 1998, 1999, when I began sort of experiencing bad dreams about the Falklands. Prior to that, there was nothing really. So 1982 to 1998-ish, 16 years. And then literally like a bolt out of the blue, I started having flashbacks and bad dreams. Mm-hmm. Alongside this, I developed what I now know to be OCD. I mean, at the time, it was quite scary. I didn't really know what that was. And also, on top of it, I became very angry. And I suppose a lot of that was because I didn't really know what was going on. Frustration. Yeah, I didn't really understand what was happening to me, as prior to this time, I had never had a nightmare about the Falklands, as I had always been a person that was in control. But as a result of this illness, I realised that I needed help. And as I had become sort of engulfed by the symptoms, almost overwhelmed, really.
And did you reach out to anybody for support, or did your family?
Yeah, there was I can't remember exactly when, but there was obviously a point when I reached out for support. But I can remember feeling very anxious and embarrassed about seeking help with a GP. And when I eventually did, I found it a really difficult experience because the illness had made me feel quite withdrawn and I was unable to fully sort of concentrate. And also on top of that, I can remember it being difficult explaining to the GP, you know, not only the illness, but the service environment, because they didn't understand. I was ill. I just wasn't functioning as I used to.
Was your GP your first port of call, or had you thought about going somewhere else, or did someone suggest you saw your GP?
I think, the GP was definitely the first contact I had with a professional, yeah. Yeah.
And so why do you think it was important for them to understand the military, the service background, what it was like in the military?
I don't know, I just felt that it might be helpful because if they understood a little bit more about the military, then I would have thought that they'd have seen people like myself before with the same sort of symptoms, and it wouldn't have taken so much, you know, explaining. Yeah, and, you know, obviously, you know, I saw lots of GPs and each time it was a different GP, which wasn't particularly helpful. And then from there, I was getting referred for different counselling. I was getting referred for CBT.
Do you think your GP, the GP when you first went, did they understand your problem, or were they able to see it in the context of your service, or do you think they didn't really understand?
No, I don't think, you know, I don't think they really understood. You know, it was it's over 20 years ago, isn't it? So I was diagnosed in 2001. So it's a long time ago. And no, they weren't aware. And I'll never forget, they were asking questions relating to the OCD, you know, because obviously the OCD can take many forms. Some of it is my repetitive behaviour. For instance, locking the car. You know, I won't just go around the car once. I'll have to go around twice or maybe three times or something like that. And the GP would say something like, well, why would you do that for? And wasn't helpful. And I can remember getting angrier and angrier. To me, that was a telltale sign that I wasn't being understood. And when I look back, it might have been probably me as well, not being able to explain properly. Because like I said, I was, you know, I wasn't in a good place.
And were you referred to several different people before someone sort of finally understood what was going on for you?
Yes, you know, I had lots of different counselling, CBT, EMDR. I got referred to the OCD hospital in London. I can remember visiting the GP. I knew about combat stress. The GP wasn't even aware of combat stress. So I referred myself there. Now, combat stress was obviously very helpful, and all their courses, actually, they're all residential courses. So they, you know, you could spend a week there, 2 weeks or even longer. But because of my, you know, I'm not going to go into it too much, but because of my OCD symptoms, that stopped me from staying there residentially. So they did try and do something for me. You know, I remember doing a couple of day courses here and there. And I said I could, because I didn't live too far from combat stress in Newport, I said I could travel there every day sort of thing. But they wanted you to sort of stay there. So that was a bit of a shame, really. But, I mean, even for the short periods I was there, combat stress, it was like a barrier had been sort of lifted, because you're immediately with your sort of peer group, fellow veterans and people that are suffering like you.
So it made a real difference to you.
Yeah, it was just a shame that I couldn't go further with it, really. I got referred, I think it was 2015, to the OCD hospital in London, St George's, I think, in London. Again, they wanted to do something for me, but it involved being there for weeks on end, residential, which, you know, I couldn't do. And I also got referred to Nine Wells Hospital in Dundee, I think in about 2018, because I got so desperate that I was even considering a brain operation. But basically, the long and short of it is that I went up there to see a consultant regarding a brain operation for the OCD. And, you know, obviously they don't do those things lightly, but I was so desperate that I was, yeah, let's do this sort of thing. But he wanted me to come back here and do further treatment, which I did. And, you know, I'm still in the same place. So that's where we are, really.
From what you've just described, it's really important in terms of being able to access care for someone to understand, to contextualise your problems or to understand where they sort of originate from.
Yes, absolutely. Because I haven't mentioned this before, but I can remember being subjected to long waiting lists all those years ago when I first presented with these problems, which wasn't particularly helpful. And I believe that if I was presenting with these problems now because of the veteran-friendly accreditation scheme and veteran-friendly accredited practices, I would be seen a lot quicker, you know, because in my case, I would be referred to Operation Courage, which, as you know, is the mental health treatment. And I might get seen within days or weeks, as opposed to 6 months, which is what happened to me. Looking back, I know now that being on waiting lists for a long, long time was not helpful. And it sort of compounded the issues and problems for me.
Yeah, so that's right. We do now have Operation Courage that GPs can refer into. And so a veteran will be seen and assessed early to make sure that they're on the right and correct treatment pathway for them. So yes, if you were seen now, then hopefully a GP accredited practice would be aware of Operation Courage and be referring you into that. So yes, so I suppose it's going to bring me on to my next question, which was, how do you think your experiences could have been improved if your GP practice had been accredited at the time? So you've mentioned already that you could have been referred to OpCourage and been seen much quicker. What other ways do you think things would have been easier for you?
I think it would have made me seek help probably earlier. I would have sought help earlier and I'd have felt positive about engaging with my GP. If the practice had been accredited, I would have confidence that they would have seen and treated people like me. And I would have felt that, you know, my symptoms would have been better understood, perhaps.
Yes, okay. And so sort of knowing that they're accredited sort of break down that barrier that you were talking about in terms of initially approaching a GP.
Absolutely, yeah, yeah.
So I just want to talk to you a little bit more about the work that you've been doing personally to support the programme. So perhaps you could explain what you've been doing to support the Veteran Friendly Practice Accreditation Programme and why you've chosen to do that.
I wasn't aware of the Veteran Friendly GP Accreditation Scheme until I saw something briefly on the television about it. And the subject matter obviously grabbed my attention. So I decided to read up about the scheme. And then I knew that I wanted to try and get more practices in England to join the scheme if I could, but didn't really know how to go about it. So, you know, I thought, well, the only way I could do something about it is email the GP practices and put a short to the point email together and basically ask the practice or the practice manager if they might consider joining this scheme because of the benefits of the scheme, how it helps veterans and what have you. And that's how it started. I started in Shropshire, which is where I live, and I just carried on then. I literally got a list of all the accredited practices in Shropshire and then just went for the ones that were unaccredited.
And what sort of response do you get? Do you explain that you're a veteran yourself when you contact them?
Yeah, I mean, I start the email off as a veteran. You know, I believe that this scheme is so positive and it's quite a slow process. I mean, some practices will respond very quickly. Other practices might take a few attempts. So I started in 2021 and, you know, I contacted the unaccredited practices in Shropshire, which resulted in 14 new practices becoming accredited. I then went to Telford and Wrekin, did exactly the same with the unaccredited practices, and that resulted in three practices becoming accredited. And I did exactly the same with Hereford next. That was seven practices became accredited. Worcestershire, 11. Staffordshire, 12. Cheshire, 22. Gloucestershire, 8. Dorset, 4. Norfolk, 15. London, Westminster, 4. And Hampshire, where I'm currently trying to get more practices to join, is 4 at the moment, Hampshire. So, yeah, at the moment, it's over 100, which is...
absolutely fantastic.
I never believed for 1 minute that it would get to that, but...
Yeah, I think you're an honorary member of our team, and I think we're very lucky to have you, and you've done really fantastic work with getting practices signed up. Do you get any feedback from any of them after they've signed up out of interest?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of practices have said that they're extremely proud to join this scheme and to help people, help veterans. Many have said that since being accredited, that they have been able to help veterans in a way that they couldn't have done before. That says it all, doesn't it, really? So, yeah, there is a lot of positive feedback.
So for you, for anybody listening to this podcast that hasn't got an accredited practice, what would you say to them right now about getting accredited?
I would say it's really positive. It's really, really important to become a veteran-friendly GP accreditation practice, because the help you can provide veterans, both being up to date with sort of mental health treatments and also physical health treatments. You've got a fantastic facility in Oswestry where the orthopaedic hospital there is Veteran Aware accredited, and you've got an army doctor there who does a lot of surgery for veterans. It's a scheme that, you know, helps people who, through no fault of their own, are in trouble. They need help. They need a helping hand. And it's important for a veteran-friendly practice to have the tools to be able to help.
Yes, and absolutely, the military covenant as well, where we're making sure that veterans aren't disadvantaged by their service time. So key points, I think, from our discussion is, for practices, if they know who their veterans are, then that enables their teams to adequately address the health needs of the veteran better. And being clear to patients that they're a veteran-friendly practice, as you described, it really breaks down barriers. So it's easier to come forward and to talk about any health concerns with their GP. And also for veterans and for the GP and the primary care teams, knowing someone's a veteran and being veteran aware means that they know about the different referral pathways that are available for veterans. And hopefully veterans' care can be dealt with in a more efficient process and more swiftly, as you described. Had this things been in place when you were diagnosed, then things would hopefully have been much quicker for you. So I think that draws our discussion to a close. So I just really want to say, Andrew, thank you ever so much for your time and for agreeing to be interviewed for this podcast. It's been really fascinating listening to your story. And I think the work that you've been doing for the programme is just absolutely amazing and really helping to improve veterans' care. So thank you very much, Andrew.
No, thank you very much indeed for letting me do it.
My thanks to Andrew for sharing your experiences, which offers greater insight into the world of veterans and how we can work towards improving care and support for them. And a huge thank you again to him for all the work that he has done and is doing to support the accreditation programme and therefore helping to improve veterans' healthcare. Becoming veteran-friendly accredited will give your practice all the information on referral pathways to services which support veterans. If you're not accredited yet, you can do so via a simple and easy process at www.rcgp.org.uk/veterans.